Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
Good evening, John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network and KYAH. Utah's Talk Radio. Welcome, welcome. You know, before we get started, I want to run this by you. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, they are speaking their truth, or he is speaking his truth, or she is speaking her truth? I got a question. What if the person who is speaking their truth is a psychopath, a sociopath, or a narcissist? Does their truth reality? It might be reality for that person, but that doesn't mean it's really real. So when you hear somebody who sits there and says, oh, they're speaking their truth, more power to you. You know what? I look at that person and I think, well, is what they're saying really based in reality? Is it real? See, I'm not one of those people who sit there and say, well, you're speaking your truth. You go. Speak your truth, more power to you. I look at you and I say, well, if you're a nutcase and you're speaking your truth, you might need medication, counseling, intense counseling, therapy sessions for years. I don't know. I don't care. What people, when they say that, what they're saying is, well, I could say whatever I wanted. It must be true because I think it is. Well, if I think I'm the King of England, does that make it so? I'll speak like the King of England. That doesn't make it real. Doesn't make it so. Just a little thing that's been just bugging me lately. And I thought, you know what? I'm tired of hearing about this. Let's really think about what these people are saying. It's the same thing when that Representative Crenshaw sent to the Hyphen and to Omar when they were getting, when they were being criticized for the remarks and some of the dumb things they really say. And they started claiming, you know, people are threatening them. You're a racist. You're a bigot. Yada, yada, yada. I'm a victim. Let me tell you something. They only play that card in an attempt to silence their critics. So if somebody plays that card, whether it's the victim card or the race card on you, tell them, one, sorry, your card is not accepted here. And two, call them out on it. Saying, you don't believe that. You just don't want to be criticized. So, remember that one. All right. As we all know, happy Patriots Day to all you Patriots out there. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Okay. Look, I know you're tired of hearing about it. I know you are. You're tired of hearing about the Mueller report and everything else. And people say, John, you should let it go. No. I'm not going to let it go. Because the people that started this crap have to be held accountable. Have to be. You don't get a freebie when you have tried to overthrow the legitimate government of the United States. You don't get to play the freebie card. Uh-uh. No. You, in for a penny, in for a pound. You rolled the dice, you lost. It's time to pay the piper. That's the way it is. However, I want you to hear something here. I don't know if you caught it the other night. It was Lou Dobbs on Fox Business Network. Love Lou Dobbs. And he had Joe DiGenova and his wife, Victoria Tensing, on. They've been very, very good. But I want you to take a listen here, what they had to say last night. I thought it was pretty interesting, and I want to share with you. It's about 6 minutes long, and it's worth listening to. because these people have been around the block. They're a Joe DiGiovanova was a former federal prosecutor, and I think Victoria Tensing was too. But anyways, listen up. I think you'll find this quite interesting, really.
Joining us tonight to take all of this up, Victoria Tensing, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Justice Department, Joe DiGiovanova, former United States Attorney for the District of Columbia, the founding partners of the DiGiovanova and Tensing Law Firm. Good to have you both here, and I want to find, I just want to turn to you and ask, how does it feel tonight to see finally the conclusions of this long-awaited report? Your thoughts, Victoria.
Well, it feels wonderful. We were very happy in the green room, but somebody there who was a Democrat said, oh, well, we just got our map to impeach the president. Mm-hmm. So this isn't over, Lou. This isn't over by a long shot. And by the way, I just want to mention something. The word collusion, for me as a lawyer, mm-hmm. is like a fingernail on the blackboard. Do you know I've never heard of collusion?
You know,
before?
Victoria, you shouldn't encourage me like that. I love that to happen to attorneys. Joe, your thoughts.
Today we saw an attorney general in full. What one is supposed to look like, a brilliant lawyer, a man capable of turning the press into pretzels by talking to them. And also, we learned something else from the full exposition of the so-called collusion part of the report. It shows that categorically there was no basis for an investigation in the first place. It is now abundantly clear that in order to restore the integrity of DOJ and FBI, there has to be a full-scale federal grand jury of the Obama, DOJ, and FBI, CIA, and Director of National Intelligence. That is not far away from happening. They poked the bear when they poked Bill Barr, and they poked the wrong bear. There is going to be a grand jury, and some folks are going to need lawyers.
I have to say, this was the most, in just a matter of a few moments, standing there before a handful of press in Washington, I was so impressed with his command, as I said, and his
yes.
intelligence and his constraint, and even, frankly, his humanity that he expressed without, you know, it was just, I thought, remarkable. And I feel the president is very fortunate to have him indeed, as is the nation.
And we wanted him. You know that. So.
I do know that. I didn't think I was going to get much of an argument on that.
But let me just, the way he, you didn't play the other sound clip of one of the
Well, give us
stupid,
time now, Victoria.
Stupid reporters.
You can't we love you as a guest. We shy from freelance producing. But go ahead.
But no, I mean, he teaches you constitutional lessons without even batting an
yes.
eye.
Yeah.
The really dumb reporter who said, well, why did you decide it? Why don't you think Mueller wanted Congress to decide it?
Yeah.
Oh, let me see. I don't think that's the role of Congress. The executive decides right. prosecutions. I mean, he just does it with such aplomb.
Yes, he does. And let's turn to when do you infer, Joe, that, and I'd like to hear from both of you on this. When do you infer that Robert Mueller understood that he did not have a collusion case of any kind, conspiracy, cooperation, however you want to construct it, with the Russians? And can you discern as well his motivations in turning to obstruction of justice, which came as a shock to everyone in June of 2017?
There's no doubt that within 60 days of his appointment, he knew that there was no evidence of collusion, or as McKay, as Strzok said, there was no there. Mm-hmm. They knew it right away, and that's why they shifted to obstruction right away, because this was not about getting at the truth. This was about getting the president. Mueller knew that when he was appointed. Rosenstein appointed him for one reason and one reason only. They knew that there was no collusion. They knew that there was only a counterintelligence investigation. That's why Mueller never should have been appointed. And so what they did was they shifted to obstruction. And to their credit, the president's lawyers knew that right away. And that's why they refused to allow the president to be interviewed. Right. And that's why the report is so frustrating for Mueller and the Democrats on the so-called obstruction side. The president was never going to be interviewed. He never should have been. There was no basis for an investigation. You can't obstruct a crime that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I think Mueller, actually, when you read the report, it's an embarrassment. It's very unprofessional. It's It's critical where it need not be. It's not a neutral and detached document. Mueller should be ashamed of himself. Mueller was a tool of Wiseman, and that's what this report is all about. This is a Wiseman diatribe.
To even
and
consider
they were
whether
all a tool of the Democratic Party, the DNC and the Hillary
Indeed.
Clinton campaign.
Indeed.
And they did, I think it is fair to say, steal the midterm elections by perpetuating the investigation beyond their original charter.
Yes.
Is that fair, Victoria?
Oh, yes. Here's what bothers me. 47% of the American people think that the Russians got in and fiddled with our voting machines, when in fact, when we read this report, we find out that the two things that they did was they put out a campaign of smearing, you know, a publicity campaign. Oh, why? We haven't heard that in a campaign before. And then they hacked the emails of several people. That was complete interference and persuaded a whole presidential campaign. No way. This is getting by with this kind of language for all this time is really the first crime.
Victoria, thank you very much. Joe, thank you. We appreciate you both being here.
You bet,
and,
Luke.
I think it's appropriate that I say to you both, congratulations. Thanks so much.
And
there you go. These two have been all over this, and my guess is they still have contacts in strategic, tactical places within the DOJ and FBI, and that's why they've been all over this thing. Very good. When they have these two on, I always watch, and if I'm not, I'm taping it or recording it. Now, as you heard, they knew within 60 days that they didn't have a collusion. And remember, collusion is not against the law. It isn't, only in antitrust matters. So then we come to this. And this is what Sundance is coming back at us. He published this yesterday. He says, now that people are starting to absorb the intent and motivations of the special counsel investigation, it's worth remembering Mueller interviewed President Donald Trump 6 days after the FBI launched a criminal, quote-unquote, obstruction of justice investigation, and 10 months after the FBI launched the counterintelligence investigation. Now, the Mueller report shows there never was a Trump-Russia collusion conspiracy case to begin with. And with the report showing how most of Mueller's investigative time was spent gathering evidence for the obstruction case, with new revelations from McCabe, John Dowd, and Mueller officials overlaid on the previous stock page text, we can now clearly reconcile the May 16, 2017 meeting between Trump and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosensnake and Robert Mueller. Here's how. All right. Now, Comey was fired on Tuesday, May 9, 2017. According to his own admissions, Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe immediately began a criminal obstruction investigation the next day, Wednesday, May 10th. And he immediately enlisted Rosensnake. Now, when you look at the text conversations between the FBI lawyer Lisa Page and FBI agent Strzok, we get this. On May 9th, you have Strzok sending, and we need to open the investigation we've been waiting on now while Andy is acting. And again, Strzok posts another one. And damn it, I'm dying down here. And Strzok texts again. Hey, I obviously want to talk, even briefly, if you're up for it. Now remember, these are all outgoing messages. And then you got Strzok once again. Hey, hit me when you're down here, when you're done with her, and I'll step it out. Again, Strzok sent out another one. I think you should go with tomorrow at lunch. Now more than ever, this is an important, critical time. The call will be fine. IM will be fine. Now, Strzok has an incoming message. It says, we need to lock in blank in a formal, chargeable way soon. It now appears the important redaction is POTUS or Trump. And yes, this is evidence from some unknown DOJ officials redacted information from these texts that would have pointed directly to the intents of the DOJ and FBI. The next day, Thursday, May 11th, McCabe testifies to Congress. With the Comey firing fresh in the headlines, Senator Marco Rubio asks McCabe, has the dismissal of Mr. Comey in any way impeded, interrupted, stopped, or negatively impacted any of the work, any investigation, or any ongoing projects at the Federal Bureau of Investigation? McCabe responded, so there has been no effort to impede our investigation to date. Quite simply put, sir, you cannot stop the men and women of the FBI from doing the right thing, protecting the American people and upholding the Constitution. My personal note here, where is in the Constitution that says the FBI and the DOJ can form a coup d'etat? I'm just asking. However, again referencing his own admissions, on Friday, May 12th, McCabe met with Rose the Snake to discuss the issues. Referencing the criminal obstruction case McCabe had just opened 2 days before. Now, according to McCabe, he says, Rose the Snake asked for my thoughts about whether we needed a special counsel to oversee the Russia case. I said I thought it would help the investigation's credibility. Later that day, I went to see Rose the Snake again. This is the gist of what I said. I feel strongly that the investigation would be best served by having a special counsel. End quote. So, recap. Tuesday's Comey is fired. Wednesday, McCabe starts a criminal obstruction case. Thursday, McCabe testifies to Congress, no effort to impede. Friday, McCabe and Rosensnake discuss a special counsel. After the weekend, Monday, May 15th, McCabe states he and Rosensnake conferred again about the special counsel approach. McCabe says, I brought the matter up with him again after the weekend. Now let's overlay what we know that we did not know in 2018 to include the John Dowd interview and McCabe admissions. A very clear picture emerges. You ready for this? You're going to like it. If you're driving, again, do not put your car in the ditch. Do not take your hands and your fist and bang on the steering wheel. Don't do that. Just hold it in until you can stop, and then you can scream or whatever it is you got to do to let out your frustration and anger. On Tuesday, May 16th, Rosensnake takes Mueller to the White House to talk with a target of the obstruction criminal investigation, Donald Trump, under the ruse of bringing Mueller in for a meeting about becoming FBI director. Oh, God, what a mistake that would have been. Knowing McCabe, not that Chris Wray is a good FBI director. As a matter of fact, he's very gun-shy about doing or saying anything. Knowing McCabe launched a criminal obstruction investigation 6 days earlier, May 10th, and knowing Mueller was ineligible for the position of FBI director, this meeting looks entirely different. This meeting looks like an opportunity to gather evidence for the obstruction case. Heck, perhaps this meeting was even recorded as part of the FBI investigation. Remember, Rosensnake's wear a wire debates? Well, did Rosensnake need to actually wear a wire, or did soon-to-be-appointed special counsel Robert Mueller just carry the recording device into an undercover deposition? Consider this. McCabe, the disgraced former acting FBI director, reveals in his new book that Robert Mueller temporarily left his cell phone behind after a meeting with the President Trump in the Oval Office, and that the phone later had to be retrieved. McCabe did not explain why he included the detail in his book. McCabe says that Mueller left the phone behind after Trump had interviewed Mueller as a potential candidate to replace James Comey as FBI director. The interview reportedly took place in the Oval Office just 1 day before Mueller had been appointed special counsel in the so-called Russia collusion case. Oh, and I think I know why McCabe included the detail in this book. Leverage. In combination with a wear-wire comments, McCabe's stealth book note is a shot across the bow to Rod Rosensnake and Robert Mueller. Only the insider small group would understand what McCabe is threatening. It's a get-out-of-jail-free card that McCabe played to escape the clutches of the 2018 D.C. criminal referral, and it looks like it worked. This would explain why D.C. U.S. Attorney Jesse Liu dropped the case against McCabe. I digress. But can you see how obvious this is? Now, the next day, Wednesday, May 17th, 2017, Rosensnake and McCabe go to brief Congress, the Congressional Gang of Eight. Paul Ryan, Pelosi, they call her Nancy Pelosi, I call her Nana, because she should be in a retirement home, an old folks home. Devin Nunes, Adam Schiff, what a pile of crap he is, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, Richard Burr, and Mark Warner. Now, on the afternoon of May 17th, McCabe writes, Rosenstein and I sat at the end of a long conference table in a secure room in the basement of the Capitol. We were there to brief the so-called Gang of Eight, the majority and minority leaders of the House and Senate, and the chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate Intel Committees. Rosen's snake had, I knew, made a decision to appoint a special counsel in the Russia case. Now, after reminding the committee of how the investigation began, I told them of additional steps we had taken. Then Rod took over and announced that he had appointed a special counsel to pursue the Russia investigation and that the special counsel was Robert Mueller. Now, immediately following this May 17th Gang of Eight briefing, Rosenstein notified the public of the special counsel appointment. According to President Trump's attorney David Dowd, the White House was stunned by the decision. Coincidentally, A.G. Sessions was in the Oval Office for unrelated business when White House counsel Don McGahn came in and informed the group. Jeff Sessions immediately offered his resignation, and Sessions' chief of staff, Jody Hunt, went back to the main justice office to ask Rosenstein what the hell was going on. Now, with hindsight and full understanding of exactly what the purposes and intents were for Deputy Rosenstein to bring Mueller into the White House, you got to revisit this from June of 2017. You ready?
You mentioned the special counsel, Robert Mueller, and you suggested, I think I heard you suggesting, that there's a question about the purpose of his investigation. I want to ask you about that, because there are some Republicans out there saying that Robert Mueller shouldn't be doing this job. Is President Trump prepared to let the special counsel pursue his investigation?
Well, I think he's considering perhaps terminating the special counsel. I think he's weighing that option. I think it's pretty clear by what one of his lawyers said on television recently. I personally think it would be a very significant mistake, even though I don't think there's a justification. And even though, I mean, here you have a situation...
You don't think, Robert, there's a justification for...
For a special counsel in this case, but also... I mean, Robert Mueller, there's some real conflicts. He comes from a law firm that represent members of the Trump family. He interviewed the day before, a few days before he was appointed special counsel, with the president, who was looking at him potentially to become the next FBI director. That hasn't been published, but it's true. And I think it would be strange that he would have a confidential conversation and then a few days later become the prosecutor of the person he may be investigating. I think that Mueller should have not taken the position if he was under consideration and had a private meeting with the president and was privy maybe to some of his thoughts about that investigation or other matters before the Bureau.
So you know for a fact that Robert Mueller was offered another position before he became special counsel?
I know for a fact that he was under consideration and that the president did talk with him in the days before he was named special counsel. I think there's a conflict there. Look, my position is that Mueller is a man of integrity, but we all know in the history of these special investigations, they go far and wide. And they go well beyond what the original jurisdiction was. He's bringing in some of the top prosecutors that have worked in the Justice Department. This is not going to be rosy for the White House. And I have to look at when you say there's no... Judy, I think we both have to agree. So far, there's been no evidence of wrongdoing. There's been no allegation that the president engaged in any wrongdoing or any member of his staff did.
There you go. Now... The DOJ, Rosenstein, and FBI McCabe activity in coordination with Mueller team was always about the obstruction case from day one. Heck, even Robert Mueller was appointed. The totality of all primary effort has always been to protect the ruse of the Russia investigation by throwing out nonsense Russian indictments and keeping Manafort, Flynn, and Papadopoulos, the original Spygate targets, under control, while the focus was on building the obstruction case against President Trump. Remember what FBI agent Peter Strzok said. He said, "You and I both know the odds are nothing. If I thought it was likely, I'd be there, no question." I hesitate in part because my gut sense and concern there's no big there. It could not be any more clear than it is today. Mueller's investigative small group were people inside Maine Justice and FBI headquarters who redacted the Lisa Page and Peter Strzok text messages and removed messages and communications antithetical to their goals. As David Nunes outlined recently, the Mueller team also kept key documents and information away from Congress, stalled any effort to expose the unlawful aspects of Spygate and the fraudulent foundation behind the Carter Page FISA application, and undermined any adverse discoveries in the leak investigations. James Wolfe, the writ large? Yes. The investigative small group didn't change when Mueller arrived. They just retooled the focus of their effort based on new leadership and new objectives. Those who created the Trump-Russia collusion conspiracy case of 2016 evolved into creating the Trump obstruction case of 2017, 2018, and 2019. Everything Mueller and Rosenstein were doing in late 2017 and throughout 2018 was intended to drag out the Russia conspiracy narrative as long as possible, even though there was no actual Trump-Russia investigation taking place. It was always the obstruction investigation that could lead to the desired result by Mueller's team by taking down President Trump through evidence that would help Pelosi and Nadler achieve impeachment. The obstruction case was is the entirety of the case they were trying to make from May 2017 to March 2019. Got it now? Does it all start? Yeah, now it's all starting to fall into place now, of course. All right. Now, what else we got? Now, let's really get to this, all right? Now, as we were just pointing out, the Mueller team has leaked. It's all about obstruction. And this is going to be epic. This is from Sundance. A couple days ago, 2 days ago, 48 hours ago. He says, "This will not come as a surprise to anyone who has followed closely, however, according to the FBI's primary narrative engineer, Devlin Barrett at the Washington Post. The Mueller team has invested most heavily in obstruction. So for 2 years, 19 lawyers were piecing the script together, while 40 FBI agents used 2,800 subpoenas, 230 orders for communication records, national security letters, FISA authorization, wiretaps, 50 pen register authorizations, and over 500 Title III search warrants to scour the background of every private communication, phone call, text message, and email of everyone in the Trump orbit, eventually interviewing over 500 witnesses for words to paste into the text of the Mueller-Weissman obstruction report." Now, as Barrett outlines on behalf of his benefactors, the team has painted a detailed narrative using every word, tweet, media, interview, comment, private confidential White House utterance by President Trump about his unhappiness with the Mueller probe as clear and convincing evidence of President Trump's intent to obstruct the investigation. Remember, it's all about obstruction, and that is Pelosi's launch platform. Now, according to the Washington Post via Devlin Barrett, he writes, "The Justice Department plans to release a lightly redacted version of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's 400-page report Thursday, offering a granular look at the ways in which the President Trump was suspected of having obstructed justice," people familiar with the matter said. The report, the general outlines of which the Justice Department has briefed the White House on, will reveal that Mueller decided he could not come to a conclusion on the question of obstruction because it was difficult to determine Trump's intent and because some of his actions could be interpreted innocently, these people said. But it will offer a detailed blow-by-blow of the president's alleged conduct, analyzing tweets, private threats, and other episodes at the center of the Mueller's inquiry, they added. So the White House approach to this is visible on the perimeter. Classic Trump, and it will catch the moonbats completely off guard. Put it all out there, all of it, as much as possible. Let the world see just how much effort was expended on this stupid investigation into nothing. This is classic Trump. You know what the media and the Democrats have forgotten? Trump owns the downside better than anyone. No one ever has yet to catch on to how brilliantly Trump owns the downside. The report will outline how many times terrible Trump lashed out over the past 2 years to his closest advisors about the damn witch hunt. It will outline every time he asked someone if he could do something to stop it. It will outline everything about how Trump wanted that damn ridiculous investigation to be done with, etc., etc., etc. However, in releasing so much granular activity, the one thing the Mueller team and the media will forget is that's exactly the behavior of a transparently innocent man, wrongfully accused. That's what you do. And you know what? Trump will own it. Trump will own it in the very Trumpiest of ways. Yeah, I said it. I was, and I'm still furious that we've had to put up with this nonsense, with this garbage. It's infuriating, etc., etc., in buckets. It's the, in the way only POTUS Trump can deliver, in the words of a common man, in the words of every man, in the words almost every American will relate to, that's how Trump will do it. Authentically and naturally, he will completely own his willingness to shut down that stupid Russia collusion nonsense. You know, he says, I'm the most powerful man in the world, right? That's what people say. The office, the power of the president, right? Not me specifically, and yet, excuse me, I'm creating job, and this stuff is complex. It's easy for me, but complex. Important stuff, talking deals, make things better, and negotiate for our country, and excuse me, and I've got this nonsense, remember, no collusion tying up my people, and excuse me, wasting so much time, interrupting everything we are doing to make America great. It doesn't stop us, but it's ridiculous. Make me angry? Sure. And for what? Sure, wouldn't you? For what? Excuse me, a report? That's it? $35 million or something, right? For what? Because a ridiculous witch hunt. No collusion. That's classic Donald Trump. 2 years of fire-breathing dragon energy Trump unleashed. Can you hear it? The Democrats and media have no comprehension about owning the downside. Now, remember 2016? Regardless of who you supported in the 2016 presidential primary race, most will admit there's one strategic advantage held by Donald Trump over all other candidates: Trump's willingness to own the downside. All policies and proposals have a downside. There's no such thing as a policy proposal with benefit to all and harm to none. This empirical truth is toxic to professional politicians. Therefore, they spend an inordinate amount of time using pretzel logic to avoid it. As a direct consequence of avoidance, the media love to use the downside as a weapon. For the first time in recent political memory, Donald Trump represents a candidacy who is unafraid of their spear and, as a consequence, immune to the damage. A case in point. NBC's Chuck Todd thought he could deploy the downside weapon during a Trump campaign stop at the Iowa State Fair. During the exclusive interview aboard the Trumpo jet, Todd deployed his arsenal, where he says, quote, but you can't actually remove illegal immigrants. I mean, you can't actually deport them, end quote. Trump owned the downside. Chuck, yes. Yes, we will. Either we have borders or we don't. Either we have a country or we don't. Like all our media punditry, Chuck was left aghast. The dangling participle remained not with a withering but. Every other candidate who has ever existed in the history of modern political candidacy would have given some form of acceptable alternative response, you know, a PC version, otherwise a lie. Not Trump. He owns the downside. This approach is what makes splody heads. A second case in point. Trump does it again with CNN's Jake Tapper, only this time Trump frames the controversial position ownership with an explanation. So what was his explanation? Simple. Donald Trump is backing up his previous position that removing Iraq's Saddam Hussein and Libya Gaddafi was not a good idea. Tapper's aghast. He says, what about the human rights abuses? The whining was me. I don't think Tapper did that. That was just me whining. Trump owns the opposite. Human rights abuse? You don't think they're happening now? They're worse now than they ever were. People are getting their hands chopped off. They're being drowned in cages right now. They're far worse off than they ever were under Hussein or Gaddafi. Another splody. It doesn't matter what the issue is. When confronted by his tax proposal to eliminate taxes on wage earners below $50,000, Trump is challenged with a skin-in-the-game argument. The response is simple. Look, it costs more for the processing of those income tax filers than the revenue which comes from them. Media, Jeb Bush wants a no-fly zone in Syria, Trump says. When did ISIS get in airplanes? Media, you can't build a wall. Trump, I build things. That's what I do. Watch me. Media, you're going to deport 11 million people? You need a deportation force. Trump, what does ICE do? And on it goes. Simple, cut-to-the-chase responses with total fearless ownership of any downside from a policy proposal. The media, but you used to be a Democrat. You have donated to Democrats. Trump's response, yes, I live and work in New York City. New York City is all Democrats. If I need to leverage assistance for my company goals, I need to work with Democrats. It's a business necessity. I look out for my employees and their best interest. Media, but you had Hillary Clinton at your wedding. Trump, yes, it was an amazing event, the best, the biggest, the most elegant, and I asked her and Bill to attend. They did. Wouldn't you? I mean, if I invited you? Media, you spend all the time talking about polls. You seem obsessed by polls. Trump says, yeah, that's because I'm winning them. If the polls were not good, I wouldn't even mention them. Duh. The march of Trumpisms continues. Megyn Kelly, you've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Trump's response, only Rosie O'Donnell. And he's right. Media, you can't build a wall. Trump says, sure I can, and Mexico is going to pay for it. Media, but you support eminent domain. Yeah, and try building the Keystone Pipeline without it. Media, but you called Sanders a maniac. Trump's, and a communist, don't forget. Media, but you declared bankruptcy. Yep, sure did, and I chaptered 4 out of 400 countries. Took over bad deals and made money on those, too. Media, but you held a rally and someone said Obama's a Muslim and you didn't defend him from it. Trump says, yeah, would he defend me? I don't think so. Media, but you attacked Ben Carson. Well, I never hit my mother in the head with a hammer, did you, Bill? When you compare how Trump owns the so-called negatives, you immediately recognize they're only negatives if he allows them to be. Thus, he doesn't let them be issues. He owns them and says, yeah, so. Trump has spent decades with Park Row media types. He has never avoided them. He totally understands how they operate, and more importantly, why. Nana Pelosi and Mueller's team think they've got him surrounded with Mueller's team, except they've forgotten. He's seemingly one man, yet he consistently has his opposition surrounded. So you watch President Trump on the downside to this Mueller report. It's going to be a thing of absolute beauty yet again. Yeah. Think about that. Think about it. You don't have to agree with it, but just think about it. Oh, here's something interesting. Mark Levin, the great one. Listen to what he says about this. What he thinks about this report, the Mueller report. It's great. I think you're going to like it.
This is a 400-page report, 2 volumes. I'm not going to sit here and read it to you. What is it, the Bible? What is Mueller Moses? He come down from Mount Sinai? It's a crap report. Volume 2 has almost no redactions. You want to know why Volume 2 has almost no redactions? The obstruction volume. Because it's all crap. It's not based on serious prosecutorial examination and investigation. It's one long New York Times op-ed. Filled with this one said this and this one said that. And when he sat over here, he looked over there. And you know what he told Christie and this. Who cares? All the misapplication of process, the misapplication of logic here. You have a prosecutor who was out to get the president of the United States, and he couldn't. No collusion, which means the basis for the entire scam has been exposed. There need not have been a special counsel. There need not have been FISA warrants. There need not have been spies in the Trump campaign. For nearly 3 years, the media, on and on and on about collusion. You had so-called reporters, so-called anchormen and women, so-called former federal prosecutors, so-called legal analysts, a conga line going on and on. We have real evidence, ladies and gentlemen, of collusion. And I'd be surprised if the president is indicted. I'd be surprised if he's not indicted secretly and it's under seal and they told the statute of limitations and when he leaves, they go for him. We heard it all. All of it. All BS. From top to bottom. From left to right.
There you have it. Well, what do you think? I think he's right. Yeah, I like Mark Levin a lot sometimes. He's like Trump. He calls it like he sees it, you know? You call a Ford a Ford and a Dodge a Dodge. Simple. Makes things clean cut, easy. All right. Now, for you people who hate Obamacare, and I'm one of them, there'll be no Obamacare repeal until 2021 at the earliest. This is a report from Front Page Mag. Oh, God, I hate these people. Congressional Vichy Republicans, I added the Vichy, have decided to resume their push to legislatively repeal and replace Obamacare only after the next election in November 2020, which means they will be able to campaign against the program over the next coming 19 months. This is, depending on your perspective, a brilliant move that guarantees the GOP recaptures the House of Representatives or the umpteenth time the GOP has betrayed its conservative, Obamacare-hating base. This delay has been engineered by Senate Majority Leader Mitch Marbles McConnell. Well, I call him Marbles, you hear him talk. Who, after President Donald Trump met with Senate Republicans last week to press for legislative repeal, excluding protections for patients with pre-existing conditions, decided not to play ball. Trump had tweeted before that he wanted the Republican Party to become the party of health care. Well, there you have it. Oh, you know what? Sometimes I just get so aggravated by all of it. I just can't stand it. But I'll go on with it. Oh. McConnell told reporters he would not promote repeal while the Democrats controlled the House. Rhino Senators Collins of Maine and Romney of Utah, why Romney? You know he's a Vichy Republican. And Collins, God, never mind, I can't even talk about that, opposed Trump's repeal drive. Of course they do. Collins said Trump was making a mistake. Democrats, of course, are fine with this because they love the health care law that empowers bureaucrats and death panels while robbing patients of their choices and setting the nation on the path to a full-blown takeover like the economically insane Medicare for All proposal. Yeah, Medicare for All proposal. Who's that from? Sanders. That's who. That lunatic. You ask him how it's going to be paid for. He can't tell you. You won't get a straight answer out of him. You can't because you can't do it. It's $32 trillion. Who the hell's got $32 trillion? Not this country. No one. So Democrat presidential hopefuls are tripping over each other and then rush to endorse Medicare for All, even though it is utterly unsustainable, which is what I just said. Democrats also want to keep the health issue care alive so they can run on in 2020 and every election until the end of time. These people claim that Democrats' health care policies helped them regain the House, though they can't seem to explain why their minority in the Senate shrunk in the same election last year. Since the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that created Obamacare was signed into law by Barack Hussein Obama on March 23, 2010, Republican lawmakers have tried to get rid of the abominable un-American law scores of times without success. But they have still tried to spin away defeats as at least moral victories. Now, GOP careerists like to put lipstick on a pig by saying the House repealed Obamacare 70-something times, by which they actually mean voted to repeal, as if that ended the matter. Every congressional repeal effort has ended in failure at the hands of the Senate or by the presidential vetoes happened in January 2016. The mainstream media responded with a mixture of glee and horror when late last month Trump's Department of Justice announced it supports getting rid of the Obamacare statute that nationalized a huge chunk of the nation's economy. But what the media has tended to leave out was the fact that Obamacare statute is already legally dead. It's not even on life support. It was killed December 14, 2018, when U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor, the Northern District of Texas, held that in 2017, Congress effectively repealed the mandate that forced Americans to buy health insurance, and in the process, that body sawed off the last leg Obamacare stood on. The court finds the individual mandate is essential to and inseparable from the other provisions of the Obamacare statute and is therefore unconstitutional, O'Connor wrote. But, unlike the aggressive leftist judges on the federal benches we are accustomed to, O'Connor agreed to stay enforcement on his common sense ruling pending appeal. At the time, President Trump celebrated O'Connor's decision with a Twitter post, which, by the way, I like the idea that the president tweets. First of all, it gets the leftist heart palpitations, and it gives the media absolute fits because they can't control the narrative. They can't tell you what the president said or didn't say. You can get it directly from the president. Now, as I predicted all along, Obamacare has been struck down as an unconstitutional disaster. Now Congress must pass a strong law that provides great health care and protects pre-existing conditions. Guys, this can be done. After calling the ruling great news for America at the time, Trump urged McConnell and then incoming Speaker of the House, Nana Pelosi, to get it done. The Hill newspaper reported March 25th that the Justice Department sent a letter to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals advising the court that its new position was that the December 14th decision should remain intact while it goes through the appellate process. Previously, it was the department's position that only parts of the law should be struck down. So the Department of Justice has determined that the district court's judgment should be affirmed, the agency said in a letter. This was not a sudden flip-flop by schizophrenic president, as left-wing journalists depicted it. It reflected a dispassionate acknowledgement of reality. Barring some activist judges or Supreme Court justices overturning O'Connor's ruling, Obamacare will remain unconstitutional. But whatever happens in the courts, the issue will not go away anytime soon. Yeah, you agree with that? But anyways, that we won't see any Obamacare repeal until 2021. Meantime, we all get to watch prices go up, bend up, bend up. It never freaking ends. It just doesn't. It just doesn't. Anyways, what else have we got to talk? All right. Hold on. Okay. Breitbart's reporting. And this is crazy. Nadler, who's the House Judiciary Committee chairman, has subpoenaed the Mueller report. Now, this mental giant, come on, I'm being facetious, you know I don't think that, Nadler on Friday issued a subpoena to Attorney General Barr for an unredacted version of the counsel report. What? He can't do that. The fool. He actually tweeted it out. He says that this morning, the House Judiciary has issued a subpoena to the Department of Justice for the full Mueller report and the underlying materials, and DOJ is required to comply with that subpoena by May 1st. Maybe they should do something that they did with Devin Nunes when the Republicans were the majority. Maybe they should slow walk it, and I mean crawl with it. Now, look, Bonehead, he's not going to get any grand jury testimony. He can't. It's against the law. The only way he can get it is if he has to go in front of a federal judge and explain his reasons why he needs it. You know what I'm saying? So any redaction, he wants all the redactions removed except those relating to grand jury information that cannot be shared by law. He says, we're entitled, my committee is entitled, yeah, that's to the full version of the report and the underlying evidence consistent with past practice. Now, he says the redactions appear to be significant, and he goes on and on with it. It's like, really, Jerry? It was funny, you know, when the Starr report came out, and that was an independent counsel, not a special counsel, Nadler didn't want the full report made public. You know, it's amazing what these wishy-washy clowns will do. I think it's even worse when we actually think about it. It's like, you want it this way when it benefits you, and you hate it when it doesn't. It's just crazy. There's just no reason for it. What else we got that's bubbling up? Today's Patriots Day. Yeah, go ahead. Jimmy Kimmel freaks. Trump's exoneration means we are effed. Yes, it does. Wait, payback with interest is coming down the pipe. Just stand by. And then you have George Conway, who's a loser congressman and has the constitutional duty to remove cancer Trump. Oh my God, the Trump derangement syndrome is on full display. Oh, what else have we got? What else have we got here? Hey, you know, while Mayor Pete Buttigieg is running for president, and he's the media's darling, look at the city he's mayor of. It's broke. It's busted. But no, I want to be president. Okay. What else we got here? What else have we got that's worthwhile? I swear, sometimes, you know, I know you're tired of hearing about it. I know you are, so am I. But I don't care. I'm never going to let it. So you want to hear how delusional the left is, especially the mainstream media? We got Chris Cuomo over at CNN. He says, I'm not going to let people say that CNN and establishment media created the false narrative around Russia. Well, then who did? You know, and that they were misleading the public. He says, this report is plenty of proof that the questions that have been asked repeatedly were legit and that the questions we were getting consistently were not, especially once you get past the line of, hey, are you a felon? Once you move past that, the things they did, the meetings they had, the explanations they gave were wrong consistently, Cuomo said. Oh, man, that poor boy's a meth head. He deserves the Golden Crack Pipe Award, I'll tell you, the way he... I can't understand how anybody can have such a skewed version of reality. I can't. So, one other point that I want to make, too, is that the reporting was almost in every case correct. Read the Mueller report. All that reporting, we and a lot of other outlets did and had it nailed, CNN reporter Chris Cizilla said in response. CNN covered the Trump-Russia story nearly constantly for over 2 years, and last summer was engulfed in a scandal over a shaky story about President Trump having prior knowledge of a meeting in Trump Tower between a Russian lawyer and campaign aides. Now, some on CNN haven't given up hope. Commentator Dana Bash simply declared on air that there was collusion in the truest definition of the word between the Trump campaign and Russia. Well, where is it, sweetheart? Because it ain't there. I swear, I don't understand these people. I don't understand how they can have such a skewed look. All right, it's time for our favorite time. I know you guys love it. I know you do. Some of you don't, but I think you do. Let's see what we got today. Yes, here we go. It's time. What's our favorite people doing this week, huh? Yes, it's time to see what our famous social justice warriors are up to. Oh, yes, it is. You guys will love it. The University Arts students, UA Arts students, call for Camille Paglia's firing over transgenderism stance, the Me Too movement. So students at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia have circulated a petition that calls for the firing of celebrated instructor Camille Paglia. Ohio Democrat proposed amendment to heartbeat bow to allow slavery exemption for black women. What? Okay. A black Ohio state representative proposed an amendment to the state's heartbeat abortion ban that would have exempted black women from the law because their history includes rape and forced birth imposed on enslaved women and black women after slavery. Okay, report. Antifa threatens Candace Owens event at the University of Pennsylvania. You know, they showed up, and the things they said to her, I won't even repeat it. You know, so members of their sympathizers, they said they reportedly planned to shut down Monday's Turning Point event at the University of Pennsylvania, where Executive Director Charlie Kirk and Communication Director Candace Owens will be speaking. If you have not heard Candace Owens speak, you don't know what you're missing. She gives liberals absolute fits. Fits, mind you. They lose it. And she is very good. I love her myself. And for those of you that really care about Alyssa Milano, she's going to share her personal abortion stories on her podcast. I guess the question is, how many abortions have you had, you sick? Never mind. I can't say it on the air. I'll be in trouble. The consent condom requires four hands to open to encourage consent. An Argentinian company has introduced a consent condom, which is packaged in a container that requires four hands to open. Oh, really? I don't know what to say about that. Oh, German parents are fined for not sending son on a mosque trip. The parents of a young boy have received a fine from a German court after they prevented their child from going to school to avoid a trip to the local mosque. Would they have done that if it was, say, a German cathedral? Just a question. Just a question between friends. We talked about that. Hollywood producer Channing Powell is terrified of big tech's future. Hollywood producer Channing Powell is getting ready to premiere The Feed, a new television show that channels her fears about the threat of big tech companies. Oh, don't these people have something better to do? I guess they don't. I just don't see it, but I don't know what else to do with them. I mean, I the reason I put this little segment out is because I want you to hear it and have the same thought of me. Like, if I didn't read this, I wouldn't believe it. I guess I'm kind of waiting for you to say the same thing, like, I can't believe these people are actually have this much time to do anything. I don't know. There's a fake news statesman, Scruton fires back after Alessa's hit job and Tory backstab. Now, that's from the United Kingdom. We don't care about that. Black pastors to Ocasio-Cortez, stop co-opting civil rights movement. The leader of an organization of black pastors directly addressed Democrat Representative the Hyphen, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I call her the Hyphen, insisting she stop co-opting the civil rights movement to advance her political agenda. We don't have an education minister. Texas Tech Medical School will no longer use race in admissions. It announced this week that they will no longer consider race as a factor in the admissions process, which is really good, I think. All right. I got about a minute, a little bit about a minute or so. All right. If you like it, you like the show, do me a favor. Give KYAH a call. They're the Talk Authority of Utah. If you like the show, fine. If you don't, give me an email. You know, send me an email. Tell me you hate the show. I could live with it. I'm not going to whine. I don't need a safe space. So, if you could, do that for me. My email is contraradio@live.com. contraradio@live.com. If you like the show, go to contraradio.network.podbean.com and hit the Patreon button. $2 a month. $2. That's what I'm asking. Not much. $2. $2. I want my $2. Well, all right. Got like 20 seconds left. All right. Hey, thanks. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. I'm humbled by you listening to us all around the planet. We are actually gaining listeners. I appreciate it. So have a good one. And I will talk to you next week. Let's see where all this ruckus ends up. Until then, I'm John Jeffers at the Jeffers Brief, saying thank you for listening. Have a good... Now, that was on the PBS News Hour.